listening to CMU Booked, Carnegie Mellon's official book podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Sam. This week we read Rejection by Tony Tillitamudi. It came out in 2024 and there is a lot to discuss, so we are very excited.
Enjoy, team.
Cultural consumption for the week, Hannah. What did you read? What did you watch?
Well, I read The Unbearable Lightness of Being and then watched the way worse film adaptation of it this past week for class. And they just made it about one of the characters, the main characters, who's a guy. And he's just like the most boring part of the book for me. I really liked Teresa, his wife, who he cheats on, and they just did her so dirty in the film adaptation. Otherwise, I watched Ocean's 11.
How was it?
It was great.
I had a great time. I read The Women, which is by Kristen Hanna, and we know I love Kristen Hanna. I'm halfway through, and the problem with me is that I keep on going back to Kristen Hanna and being like, oh, let me read her new books, and none of them are as good as The Great Alone or The Nightingale, which is really, really sad. But The Women is a novel by Kristen Hanna about this woman who becomes a nurse in the Vietnam War, and it's just, it's not hitting for me thus yet. But Kristen Hanna, if you're listening to this, I still love you.
Aww. Aww. I'm sure she appreciated that.
Yeah, she's going to DM me. I'm right. Really excited.
You're so in.
I'm so in, guys. So this week, Hannah and I read Rejection. Hannah, do you want to explain what the structure of this book is about?
There's sort of an overarching plot, although I would be wary to put that label on it. It's a collection of short stories. There are seven and then acknowledgments, but they are really like case studies about relationships and sort of the trials and tribulations of, you know, acceptance versus rejection. I think it's a really good mirror into like what this generation, how this generation treats relationships and that communication.
I really enjoyed it. And also it made me think about being chronically online and how that manifests, because like all of these characters essentially are like chronically online. And I also liked how the characters developed, because the first, Hannah and I think have different opinions about the very first story, but we'll get into it a little bit about, let's have a debate. So the first story is called The Feminist, and Hannah and I briefly talked before this. We didn't want to spoil anything for one another in opinions wise, but I thought it was a really great intro, and I heard through the grapevine that you were a little bit disappointed with kind of how it manifests throughout the book or how it ended.
I thought that it was the strongest story just because of how uncomfortable it made me, which honestly is just my cup of tea as a person who consumes things. Like, if you're not making my skin crawl or surprising me, like, I'm bored. Obviously, a title as provocative as The Feminist from an author who, you know, identifies as male, I think is something to be wary of initially. But I really enjoyed how the first story ended with his sort of catapulting into Fight Club-esque incel violence.
I also don't think it's a crazy overgeneralization to say that this is the best story in the bunch. This is the one that was The Feminist. The first one was the one that was published through, it was either the New York Times or the Paris Review.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but I guess in the vein of sort of the uncomfortability aspect, did you feel that, or were you like, it's a lot to swallow because you're getting this guy's sort of inner dialogue of just like how internalized misogyny and like notions about feminism versus misogynism, whatever.
I was so uncomfortable. And I think I completely agree with you on like, if you're not making me feel this crazy emotion, then like, why am I reading? I'm not reading to be comfortable like 99% of the time, unless I'm reading Kristen Hanna. But I was reading this. I feel like I'm at a time in my life, I'm at a time in every young woman's life where they start to be like, wow, all men disappoint me. And so reading this was like a great timing. And I was At the very beginning of this story, you almost sort of get where this character, the feminist, his name is Craig, as we learn later, is coming from. Like, he is sort of trying his best, and he grows up in a newly integrated all-girls school. And so he's like, no, like, I get women. And it kind of comes down to that thing that I've been realizing that's like, you will never get it. And I think that's something that he will never realize, this character. And that just, like, was punching me over and over again. And I was just, like, so frustrated with it. And so it's a frustrating story to read. I completely agree. But did you get that same sense of, like, yeah.
Not every piece of art is for you.
Yeah.
Also, like, as an artist, like, yes, audience is important. But also, it's not. I would agree with you. Except I think that a core thing that I think the story does a really good job of is, you know, who asked for male favors, right? Like, what you're saying, you'll never be able to fully, you know, take a walk around in someone else's skin. And a part of growing up is, like, accepting that, right? Like, what you're saying, like, you'll never fully understand another person or their experience in, like, the same way that women have to accept that they have systemically, you know, subordinate role to men, or even historically, like,
I don't know.
This is going to complicate that. So those were...
No, but that's completely fair. And I think that that is also sort of a thing that annoys me about this character, is that he is so, like, dead set on, like, I'm a feminist. Like, he really wants to understand it. And that is almost more irritating than a guy who can just be like, no, like, I will never get it. And even that, I think, kind of manifests in one of the very short scenes that stuck out to me in this first chapter, The Feminist, where Craig is at a picnic and starts just getting in this huge, like, ideological debate about feminism with these friends, and it gets very volatile. And there's an unnamed male character that, like, steps in and is like, dude, just take a step back. And Craig is like, oh my God, this guy isn't even, like, a huge feminist. He hasn't read Joan Didion. Like, he doesn't get it. And it's like, well, obviously he doesn't get it. But that's not important. That's not what we're supposed to take away from this, from the story, or as human beings.
The total, diverge into, right, like, his incel online presence. Like, there was one phrase he used in particular that I wrote down, yeast buckets, he calls women. And I think that the author does a really good job of building him up and giving him, you know, he's making him a three-dimensional character, Craig, that is, but still is able to reconcile sort of his life experience with the outcome. You know, like, you're still an agent of your own, like, volition. And I also think that... he does such a good job of showing how loneliness sort of transforms into blame, which then transforms into hate, which then just obsession spirals, and obsession spirals out of just an inability to separate humiliation from rejection. You're not humiliated when you're rejected, and I think that is such a huge part of these people. It's a personal slight instead of, you know, a moment of change. In the vein of, like, combating 21st century social transformations and customs and conflicting internal desires, like, what did you make of the desire present in this? And maybe in the first story or another one, if you want to jump around.
I mean, the idea of desire is so interesting in this, especially because I think, like you were saying with loneliness, loneliness is such a character in all of these people's lives. And I also really agree with what you said about humiliation. And a line that stuck out to me, and I think this is a chapter with a different character named Kant.
Iago.
I believe it's in this chapter that Kant says humiliation is not the same as shame, because humiliation is a thing that happens to you, but shame is a state of being. And he's kind of in that idea of isolation that it just becomes so prominent to him that it becomes a state of being. And so I like the idea of making these things that could just be one-off occurrences into a state of being. And I think that a lot of these characters' desires are to get out of that cycle somehow. They end up in these, like, isolated things where they're like, this is who I am now. But it's not. What I like to take away from that, at least.
Yeah, when that humiliation is integrated as, you know, this sort of false notion that it's inherent to you, mm-hmm. only results in sort of this shame and feelings of, you know, further regret and hatred. And it just spirals into this, you know, monster. And I think from the same story that you just referenced, which also Iago is then called Or the Ballad of Sexual Repression, which honestly almost turned me off when I started reading it, because I was like, oh, snooze fest.
Right.
But then it was interesting. I thought on page 99 of the hardback edition, Kant has a line where he says, "A body that feels no pain can elicit no shame," and then continues to say, "can't be shamed either." And so it's like you have to dissociate from yourself in order to carry on. Again, it's not being able to, I think, internalize rejection as a byproduct of situation and where you are in your life, right? And instead, someone like the main character of Pix makes her entire identity and self-worth, which we also see as a, you know, run out in her own disordered eating mm-hmm. and perceptions of other women, how it just spirals out of control.
I was thinking about the title a little bit and all of this, like, this conversation. I mean, it's rejection. It's not rejected. This is kind of a general thing, but it's rejection. It's not, like, a constant state of being. It's, like, a thing that happens. And so I like to think that it's a little, like, optimistic in that sense. It's not, like, you're forever rejected. It's a two-way street of a thing that someone does to another person.
There's this comedian special where he talks about the idea of a puzzle piece, where a lot of individuals feel that their life relies on finding their significant other mm-hmm. and sort of putting that puzzle together is your whole purpose. And on page 70 of the hardback, again, there's a line that says, "You feel as if you cannot exist without love. You are addicted to the prospect of unearthing new love like a deep buried gem, of cleaning it and finding yourself reflected in its coruscating facets. What we're talking about, right, like state of being versus situation.
Right.
I feel like their perception of state of being is this sort of completed idea of life. Like, once you've solved, you know, gathered all the pieces, then you can put them together and everything will be okay. And being rejected or rejection is a disruption in that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's exposing that gray area that maybe we're not really fed as individuals, especially like nuclear family, America, whatever. Like, it's complicating that, which honestly I think the last book that really did that for me was Miranda July's book,
right,
that we did on
All Fours
podcast. Yes, yeah. All Fours, where it's sort of breaking down these relationship structures.
But I was curious, you talked a little bit and we've talked a lot about this, like, state of being and everything. Do all of these characters, in your opinion, fall into state of being versus situation, or are there characters, in your opinion, that are able to, you know, look outside of their situation a little bit further?
I think the voice in our dope future would probably think so. Yeah, that's my other one I wrote down. Fave, abusive relationships and red pill culture. I think that that's the exception to the rule.
And I completely agree.
Because he is so convinced of himself. And it's honestly, like, what a refreshing part of a collection of short stories. That's what I'm talking about. Surprise me. Make it bizarre, but not overtly sexual.
Right.
Like Iago. I thought that that was a little hard to get through at a certain point, just of how I sound like an old person, but like vulgar. I don't want to read about that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the sort of stuff that you hear about online and like I, you know, cringe at.
Yeah.
But aside from that, Our Dope Future does the sort of controversial stuff that the feminist does, but in this like crazy satirical way that connects it back to Pix, which I thought that's the second chapter or second story that I thought was also so strong.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you think about Our Dope Future?
Our Dope Future
is dope.
It was so crazy.
Poor Allison.
Poor fucking Allison. Bro, you feel for her.
She dumb as hell, though.
Oh, yeah.
She, in the second story, just could not let go of that mid-ass man.
No, genuinely. Ooh,
and then let all her friends go.
Yeah.
No. Not to say that I think she should be with Our Dope Future man. When she starts dissociating, it's really a lot.
Do you think that this was the right voice to write that chapter from, Hannah?
Yes. I think it is, because it's another side of sort of the online argument that we get in The Feminist of this sort of culture. I mean, this echo chamber that people get themselves into. I think about, Truth Social and, like, QAnon platforms and how there's just the same amount of, you know, content going in that I think it's sort of, it's abrasive. And all of these, especially the beginning, all of the stories sort of deal with this social media aspect and also how that contributes to feelings of rejection, humiliation, shame, guilt, you name it.
But
Our Dope Future, and I think especially Pix, what does it say about technology, but also like social media at large for you?
Ooh,
especially as people, as children of the digital age.
100%. As a short biography of my digital experience, I was given a laptop at age 9 or 10 with unlimited internet access, and I have not left the internet since. So I would definitely call myself chronically online, which lent a hand in reading these stories. In the fact that some of it is like so like technical that you're like, I know what they're talking about here. I know what 4chan is. I know what Discord is. I know how Twitter works, you know, in a way that I think this book speaks to a newer audience in a really cool way. Especially because if you described the way that this book is written and how they go through like entire like Reddit subreddits and everything, I would, without reading it, I probably would have been like, that you can't do that, like that's just lame, you know. But actually reading it, I was really impressed in the way that it connects our lived experiences and the real emotions that tie into the way you grow up online, because it may not be as real, but there is a real person behind there that's experiencing all of those emotions. And I thought that this did a really great job of not being corny, but still, you know, applying all of those ideas.
Definitely. And as our producer so staunchly pointed out, no one over 30 has even the ability to understand this book, even from a satirical perspective, right? Like in Our Dope Future, when he's like, and he's like a homeschooled kid, right? And he says, girls always want to talk about this. Plus, while she's talking, it gives me time to memorize her drink order and eye color. Something I found makes me look totes on point when I mention it later. And it's like, my mom would read that and she would be like, yeah, totes. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have the same impact.
Right.
It just won't make sense. This narrative will not make sense, especially the AI component, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
We'll get to next. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to say that when talking about social media and technology and all of this, I think it's just another outlet for these people to escape their realities and the fact that they feel such deep internal hatred for themselves because of being in a state of rejection. There's on page 70 of the hardback again, it talks about, there's a quote that says, the loneliest are the easiest to manipulate. Mm. And what's lonelier than being on the other side of a screen? You know, and being manipulated by rejection. Wow. And, you know, we see it in these online platforms. Mm. So I think yeah, I think it's super important to think about social media in the context of this book, which honestly, while I was reading, you know, I was taking it in, but I wasn't really understanding it because I think it's such second nature to us.
Yeah.
Like if someone's putting in an email, like I'm not going to blink twice at it,
yeah,
you know, into a story.
100%. I agree. I think that it was like easier to read than expected. And I also want to say on the idea of the internet, like it's such a double-edged sword for these characters, which I want to talk about with Pix a little bit, which is the second story with a character named Allison. And she's like going back and forth with this guy, Neil, and getting her opinions about Neil from this group chat that she's in. And I thought that it was so perfectly illustrated that the internet is a double-edged sword for these characters in the way that she looks for validation about her relationship from that group chat and receives it, and then is rejected from that group chat subsequently. And you see how not only is this space a place for her to find the only friendship she really has in life, but it's also the place where, just like real life, you know, you can kind of get rejected, except it's all the more permanent in that you're literally blocked from the group chat, you know?
It's just all of these situations in which these people cannot communicate in all in different ways, right? Like the feminist, no, he doesn't feel understood inherently. And like Pix, she doesn't say anything until it's too late. And then she blows up in the group chat, right? And then has this rejection with them. And the same thing with Aigo, like Kant cannot for the life of him talk to his boyfriend about their sex life. And where does that get him? Our dope future, he's not even capable of it, you know? Like, he's not even capable of having a conversation with another living organism,
no,
much less a woman.
Right.
And B.
B is like this omnipotent being almost, but you're introduced to them as a character through like a biography of their life, and then you get to something called The Post, which is where B explains how they created this entire like sub chain. We're not exactly sure why B does what they do, but I thought it was so interesting because the chapter starts out being like, this is, you know, lots of people have different opinions about what The Post is. What The Post is, it's become this phenomena. And I was sitting there like, I don't want to read, you know, a bunch of different fake Reddit posts. But it became so interesting, and a question about what truth means on the internet and what it means to exist as a person online who's just trying to, you know, create something other than the reality of their actual life. And who can you judge based on a profile, etc. So what did you think about this chapter? Because I was obviously enamored by it.
I enjoyed main character. I enjoyed The Post's narrative when we got her going to college and them, you know, having a pretty disruptive first encounter with fellow college students. I thought that that was a good start. I did not like the way that the conceit was concluded. I thought that I'm actually not sure where it's placed. Maybe it's at the beginning of re-rejection or it's in main character, but where we get all of these different possibilities of how the post was constructed and this whole narrative and blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, oh yeah, AI.
We were completely sort of confused. We were confused about what happened at the end concerning The Post. And so at the end of the chapter about The Post, it just gives like, we don't know. We never know what happens. And I thought that was a pretty satisfying conclusion in my personal opinion, because I like a little bit of a mystery. And isn't that kind of the point? Is that like, what can you judge about truth or reality if it's on the internet? Then in re-rejection, which is like the concluding chapter, it just, they throw that all away and say, oh, it was AI. Which is kind of a cop-out, in my opinion.
I just can't deal with metafiction, I think. The more I read it, the more I just really struggle with getting into it and accepting it. And honestly, it's just because, you know, it's funny because I like breaking the fourth wall. But metafiction, it just feels phony. It's like Pale Fire by Nabokov. Mm. It's like you're making a commentary about writing, but doing it through writing, which has been constructed on all of these things you now claim to deconstruct. Yeah, and I just feel like it's a little bit of a trite objective. I don't really enjoy that. And I thought that the idea of re-rejection being, you know, editors sending him a letter back and saying, it's just read as really narcissistic to me. I felt that I was getting a glimpse into the author's mind that I could have done without, because it's like, oh, I'm so smart and I'm tricking you. And I'm also making this commentary about, you know, perception and editorial, you know, perspective, because this is different and whatnot. It's like, I felt a little hit over the head with messages not fully fleshed out. Oh. It's like, he can't finish any story and now you're going to give me this whole open book ending? I mean, at least give me something to concretely think about. I feel like I had lots of loose ends.
Re-rejection, which is it's basically the author writing from the perspective of like a publishing house rejecting his manuscript, this manuscript that we've just finished reading. And so you read that as him being like, oh, well, this is, my book is too high concept for you guys. Like, you wouldn't even get it. Like, is that kind of what you felt like you were saying? That's why you thought
it was a commentary more so, but not in a fully fledged way. He's sort of just giving you like, perspective is different and it's arbitrary and that's it.
But isn't that kind of like the point? So I guess that's fair that you're saying that he's hitting us over the head with the point.
It's also just a bit of a cop out narratively. I don't mind someone inputting themselves in a novel. I don't know how I feel about it by name. Again, it just comes down to, like, your opinion as a reader, right? Like, do you like metafiction? Do you like an author inputting their own theory and ideas and themselves, maybe their name, into something? Like, I just fundamentally am apprehensive when I see it. And so I liked the integration of himself into other characters and into the structure of the narrative. But explicit reference, I don't know how I feel about.
It's funny, I was talking to my boss today at my office job and they were like, what are you reading? And I felt like I couldn't recommend it to them on the basis of what we were talking about in that one chapter where it gets really like grotesque and specific about sex.
And not just sex.
Yeah.
Virtual sex.
Right.
Like fantasy
like
sex.
Like virtual BDSM, which is just something that when I'm talking to my adult boss, I feel weird if they take my recommendation and then are reading it and like, wow, this is...
Yeah.
Kind of a choice.
I would never recommend this to someone who doesn't love to read. Mm. People who love to read are open to new perspectives and experiences, for the most part, you would like to think.
I would like
people who love reading. And so for that, I would definitely recommend the book. Yeah, right? Like casual recommendation? I don't know. Depends on the person. I probably wouldn't recommend this to like my sister, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. You never know. It depends on if you meet someone and you're like, you could learn something. Although that might be a lot. If you're like, hey, this book made me think of you.
Like, I would be offended.
Yeah, no, it would be a terrible feeling. 100%.
Which it kind of reminds me of what you were talking about earlier with All Fours by Miranda July, which is a book we previously did. I felt that book was also pretty explicit, but about like actual sex. And even for me, I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would recommend this to my mom, but this one specifically, you're completely hitting the nail on the head with that. I guess I would recommend it to my weird friends, not my weird friends, but my friends who are more open to, like you said, like readers who are more open to different perspectives and ideas, you know?
Tumblr community.
Yep.
This is for you. AO3 readers. This is for you. Thank you so much for listening, guys.
But let's get into the CMU question of the day, which is, if this school year was going to be the vibe of one movie, which movie would you want it to be?
Well, I recently watched an Iranian horror movie called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. It's in black and white.
Is it silent? Be honest.
It's not loud. That's for sure. It's about finding people who see the world in a darker way that you do, but also, and this is the biggest part, it's about vampires. So that's what I want this school year to feel like. How about you?
I need
that movie.
I chose a very different answer, which is Juno. Juno specifically, it just like elicits, you know that song that she plays with
You're a short time from me and a long time friend. Anyone else but you.
Just this twee bullshit that I love.
I was literally about to say Sam is entering her twee era.
And let me thank you for recognizing this. You see me.
You're going to embody the We Are Never Getting Back Together music video harder than any other. Harder than Zooey Deschanel could.
Yeah, she didn't get my vision. Let me cook. Put me in, coach.
Okay, well, she is queen of twee.
No, you're right. I could never. I'm not coming for her crown. Remember to follow us on Instagram at CMU Booked. Reach out if you want to be a guest. Pitch us books. All of that good stuff.
As always, if you see me in Prima, that is the hunting ground. Find me there.
Or run.
Bye.